This week's episode is brought to you by Tyler Bars, Charlie Evans, Dennis Wager, and Miles Shonikas. Thank you, Tyler Bars, Charlie Evans, Dennis Wager, and Miles Shonikas. It's with the generous support of listeners just like you that helps keep our telematic inverse phase vacuum induction nanotube capacitors filled with enough mysterious green gelatinous substance to power our polychronic spectral frequency net submerged in the astral matrix to catch non-baryonic hyperionized thought displacement bubbles we use to calculate the speech vectors for this episode. If you'd like to keep us stocked up on gelatinous goo, or just hear the second half of this episode, then please visit www.patreon.com/thewholerabbit, where your monthly donation of just $5 will not only get you access to the second half of this episode, but our entire library of episodes going back over 4 years. Once you sign up, you can even browse these extended episodes from right within your Spotify app, which is most convenient. But that's not all. I'll send you a 5x5 high quality vinyl sticker of our Big Bunny Baphomet cover art, and you'll be given the secret keys to our Discord server, where it's like a support group for warlocks. In this week's episode, we continue the story on the life and times of the prolific inventor and wizard of electricity, Nikola Tesla. In the first half of the show, we discuss his harrowing journey to America, his rags-to-riches rise to stardom, the role he played in the War of the Currents, and how he interacted with and differed from the great inventor, Thomas Edison. In the second half, we discuss his dazzling stage performances, the invention of the Tesla coil, wireless transmission, his little-known psychic faculties, and how he changed the course of history at Chicago's 1893 World's Fair. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Wind turbine's favorite color?
What?
Blue.
Oh gosh.
That took me a second.
Where do light bulbs go shopping?
Where?
The outlet stores.
Oh.
What do arsonists and electricity have in common?
What?
They both light up buildings. What did the baby light bulb say to the mommy light bulb?
What?
I love you, Watts and Watts.
Aww.
And what do electricians chant when they meditate? This is in fact the case, yes.
Finally got one.
Hello everybody, and welcome to The Whole Rabbit, where we do more than just lecture you about the profitable applications electricity has to impress our deep-pocketed investors with promises of more efficient factories equipped to keep its employees slaving away late into the night with our new array of overhead lighting technology before we suddenly replace them one day with robots who speak in soothing British accents. Nay, we fire up the gargantuan oscillating transformer and pass thousands of bolts through our body until lightning erupts from our fingertips like purple-white glowworms of death as we cackle hysterically with exuberant madness, because this week, once again, we're discussing Nikola Tesla and the magic he used to defeat the electric pope, Thomas Edison, in the War of the Currents. I'm your host, Hack Rabbit, also known as Luke Madrid. I'm joined this week by the unmuzzled madam, Mari Sama.
Awoo!
The mysterious monolith, Malachor 5.
Malachor used Thunderbolt.
And the hermetic hopper of hellfire, Heka Astra.
Hello.
So last week, we discussed how weird Nikola Tesla was as a child, how big his brain was, but most importantly, how he suffered hallucinations that he slowly learned to control, turning them into a powerful tool for creative visualization. To recommence our tale where we left off, Tesla was all of 27 years old when he figured out how to run a motor using AC power, a groundbreaking discovery which would come to revolutionize the blossoming electric industry. But most important, it meant that he had proven his university professor, Jacob Puschel, wrong. Puschel had declared publicly, after all, that to create a motor without a commutator was impossible, a feat against the laws of physics and nature. To review, a commutator was an expensive, annoyingly inefficient, spark-producing device that converted the lumpy, flip-flopping back-and-forth flow of alternating current into the smooth, continuous flow of direct current to run motors and lamps regularly. But for years, Tesla wanted to eliminate the need for a commutator. Now, he had finally figured out about how Tesla, the aspiring wizard, had slain his first dragon. This accomplishment was destined to transform him from a student wizard to a heroic one, and he knew it.
He said, quote, "I had carried out what I had undertaken and pictured myself achieving wealth and fame."
Nonetheless, Tesla was aware that others had been experimenting with rotating magnetic fields and even acknowledged them in his writings. 3 years earlier, Walter Bailey had demonstrated it could be done in front of the Physical Society of London, and Galileo Ferraris had designed an AC system in Turin, Italy. But a US judge would eventually declare that Bailey's ideas were but practical abstractions, while Professor Ferris confessed, "Tesla developed it much further than I did." In short, Tesla had taken something vaguely dreamt and actualized it into something practical that was bound to change the world.
I guess that's the essence of magic, right? Taking a dream or something immaterial and actualizing or realizing it into reality.
And the wizard archetype tinkers with spells. They dig more into reality. They find novel tricks that they can then exploit into something that's, well, you know, useful for their party.
Study.
In this case, Tesla took theory and elevated it to something practical, so much so that a judge, a high priest of a sort, was like, yeah, that's what actually counts. You can't just spin a thimble in a lab and be like, oh, I reinvented the wheel. It's like, you actually have to make the damn wheel.
I also thought it was interesting, we touched on this in the last episode, how he would describe getting a feeling when he knew he was close to an epiphany or coming to a solution. And that's another thing I think goes with the wizard metaphor so well, because wizards have an extremely high perception. So it's likely that he could actually feel out further into the future than other people could using his senses.
And as time goes on, he begins to get some theories about how he does that. Even still, Tesla needed money now, not later. And he made good on his original intention here in Budapest to work on the Edison Pushkas telephone exchange that he had been invited to work on at his uncle's request. If you recall, both Pushkas and his uncle were fancy hussars.
What's a hussar?
Serbian light infantry. I mean, they look kind of like, you know, Count Dracula or Vlad the Impaler. They had that kind of look about them. They're very fancy.
Wow. And they rode the horses around.
Mm. Yeah, they're like slashing down Turks with their scimitars and stuff. Fancy infantry. So this telephone exchange, it was designed to be a game changer, since hitherto, telephone lines usually ran between two specific places. This machine, however, had an operator that could connect any two lines on the network. You know, like, operator, connect me to the police. True to his character, Tesla worked diligently on the exchange, and even invented a cone-shaped amplifier, which would prove to be the precursor of the loudspeaker. Although he never patented the device, he later boasted it was equally as innovative as his other well-known machines. So he's still proud of it.
So prior to this, they just had a private line system where it would go from one area to another area, but this system that they were making, it was a single person working as an operator, and you pick it up, so like dial zero and then tell them who you want to get connected to, kind of thing.
Yes, and it was fairly expensive, so there was between like, what, 20 and 100 people on the switchboard, and the operator would see a light ring and then they'd pull the cable out and be like, hello, who are you calling? And they'll be like, this person. Like, okay. And they stick it into the hole and you're now connected to that person.
Yeah, there was only so many lines to connect to. It wasn't like today where every single person has a phone.
Exactly.
And yeah, and there's actually like a magical perspective on this. You know, this is like what it is to talk to an archangel or an archdemon. Like, I need to talk to a specific spirit. It's kind of like how this system sounds. I need to talk to one of your lessers. Operator, hey, archdemon, I need to talk to specific lesser demon. Okay, here you go.
It's just Andromelic behind the operator board like, hello there. Then, no sooner had the exchange been completed, Mr. Frank Pushkas sold it, and his brother Tivdar invited both Tesla and his bestie, Zagetti, to come to Paris in late 1882 to assist in the installation of a new Edison electric lighting system. As it turns out, the French were mystified by electric lights, having showered Edison with praise a year prior for his display at the Electrical Exposition. Edison had installed, within the Great Exhibition Hall, a working lighthouse, jumbo generators, named after the P.T. Barnum elephant, and a vibrant collection of 500 incandescent lamps sporting 16 candle power each. Enchanted by the display, one Frenchman wrote,
"We are not yet in the habit of observing machines that function without apparent cause. Their occult workings baffle us. The secret of their existence escapes us."
And similarly, conferred upon Edison the Légion d'honneur, the French equivalent to the United States Medal of Honor, except that civilians are also eligible. It's the best possible honor you could ever receive from the French, Statue of Liberty notwithstanding. And while the French thought Edison was magic, Tesla thought Paris was magic. There he spent the first few days traipsing, quote, through the streets in utter bewilderment of the new spectacle. He also liked the food and drink, which he said were many and irresistible, leaving him badly in want of money, vanishing as soon as it was earned. Likewise, when Puskás once asked Tesla how he was doing, he replied, the last 29 days of the month are the toughest.
Nice.
I'm stealing that
I feel that.
Even still, the luxuries Tesla enjoyed in Paris were enough to make any of us modern dudes a bit envious. The Serbian wizard would shack up in a hotel on Boulevard Saint-Marcel, near the picturesque Latin Quarter, replete with the buzz of students and professors. Tesla loved his daily routine. He'd start by swimming 27 laps at a bathhouse on the iconic Seine River, followed by devouring a hearty, quote, woodchopper's breakfast. Then, around 7:30 or so, he did a half-hour stroll to work at the Avrisor Seine Lamp Factory, recently constructed by Edison. In the evening, Tesla would wander the gaslit avenues, enjoy the new electric lights he helped install at the Gilded Paris Opera, and finally ended the night playing billiards with his co-workers. He could still shoot pool after all. From the sounds of things, Paris really seemed to bring Tesla out of his shell. One night, at dinner, a famous French actress, Sarah Bernhardt, dropped her scarf near his dining table, which culminated in a rousing and flirty conversation between the two. Although Tesla would deny anything explicit ever happened between them, he held onto her scarf the rest of his life, which, despite being an ardent germaphobe, he never once washed.
Huh? It's because girls don't have germs.
Especially French girls. They never have germs. They might have armpit hair, though. Fair warning.
I was going to say.
Aside from enjoying the city life, Tesla was, albeit a little strange, proving himself as a hard worker within the company and gaining practical experience with state-of-the-art devices, rounding out his understanding of the industry a little bit. He helped advance arc lighting along various streets, including Avenue de l'Opera, assisting the transformation of Paris into the City of Light. Then one day, like with Anthony Seghetti, Tesla was showing his co-workers a sketch of his new AC motor in some dirt with a stick, when he remarked, my idea was that the more wires I used, the more perfect would be the action of the motor, to which they scoffed, replying that copper wires were the most expensive part of the distribution system, and as a rule, everyone wanted less wires, not more. It seems like this may have stuck with Tesla, and while it seems like an obvious criticism, Tesla intuitively felt that more was the way to smooth out electricity's lumpiness, an impression which, albeit a bit premature in execution, proved to be correct. Despite these initial yucks, Tesla's engineering proved to be remarkably efficient, developing an innovative automatic regulator that enhanced the performance of Edison's dynamo. He was also a valuable asset for his mathematical training, which effortlessly allowed the Serbian engineer to calculate and sometimes intuit things like the length and diameter of a motor's coils. These remarkable skills were not lost on Edison executives, who began to see him as their new problem solver, and sent him to clean up the mess they had made at the Strasbourg railway station in Deutschland. During a dedication ceremony with German Emperor Wilhelm I, the array of light bulbs had short-circuited and exploded spectacularly. Perhaps it was the pointy helmets? As a speaker of both French and German, Tesla was well-equipped for the task and wrestled with the beguiling installation of 4 direct current generators, 1,200 incandescent lamps, the 5 AC generators, and 60 arc lights, revealing the issues were due to faulty wiring in the subterranean conduits. That sounds awful. I would hate that job. I'd be like, I don't like this electricity stuff anymore. During his 12-month stay, Tesla and his buddy Seghetti spent their nights working out the details of their AC motor inside of a closet to assure utter secrecy.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Brilliantly, Tesla made up his mind to build the simplest design possible, saying, it was the simplest motor I could conceive of, having only one circuit and no windings on the armature or the fields. Near the end of summer, after months of trial and error, swapping out different metals for the stator's core, they, at long last, got the rotors spinning correctly. Tesla said he finally had the satisfaction of seeing rotation affected by alternating currents of different phase, and without sliding contacts or a commutator. All all as I had conceived a year before.
Without that damn commutator.
Without the damn commutator. He just needed spaghetti in the closet for a little while to help him. Tesla immediately began seeking investors to continue work on his revolutionary AC motor, but while many wealthy, connected people were thoroughly impressed, none were willing to part with their precious coin to fund an unproven inventor, let alone an experimental technology. Then, believing a reward had been offered for detangling the mess in Strasbourg, Tesla found himself tangled in the Edison bureaucracy, where each time he asked one corporate administrator about the bonus, they suggested the issue fell to another administrator and to call them instead. This proved for Tesla, unlike the train station disaster, to be a tangled mess he could not figure out.
That's like anyone who's ever tried to figure something out over the phone with a company. Oh, that's not our department. Let me patch you through to this department.
Thank you for calling the Los Angeles Municipal Court. This is an automated system that can handle most inquiries.
Oh, and then it starts the endless loop.
It's awful.
Being transferred here and there.
I spent like 4 or 5 hours on the phone total calling so many numbers. I had an entire sheet of paper full just trying to figure out one question about my health insurance one time. It was bad.
Can't I just make a doctor's appointment? What the fuck?
It was more like, does this plan include dental, yes or no? I'm serious. I could not get an answer to this question.
So apparently Tesla went through this whole being passed off to other people just like that?
Yes. He said, after several laps of this Circulus Vivius, it dawned on me that my reward was a castle in Spain. I was unfamiliar with this figure of speech, so I did a little digging for those of you who are going to have this on your mind. Turns out, the origin of castles in the sky, much like pie in the sky, originally referred to the Moorish occupation of Spain, which precluded the ability to build European castles there. Now you know.
Oh.
It's like subtly anti-Turkish. It's very Serbian of him. Now, even if the Edison Company had given him the runaround regarding his reward for fixing the Strasbourg station, Charles Batchelor, Edison's closest advisor, invited Tesla to New York to both meet the big cheese himself and help Edison improve the dynamos that he had under development at the Edison Machine Works. Tivdar Puskas thought it was a good idea as well and wrote to Edison saying, I know two great men and you're one of them. The other is this young man. Unable to find any backers in Europe, Tesla agreed to try his luck in America, which he dubbed in his writing, the Land of Golden Promise. You're damn right, Tesla! There's so much opportunity here, I'm drowning in opportunities.
Feels good.
Let the montage begin. Tesla's journey to America was fraught with peril. He had liquidated his assets, made all the necessary preparations, but by the time he arrived at the train station, he realized both his money and ticket were gone. Worse still, the train was already pulling out of the station. What to do was the question. Hercules had plenty of time to deliberate, but I had to decide while running alongside the train with opposite feelings searching in my brain like condenser oscillations. What a nerd.
That's very specific.
It is. When Tesla arrived at the dock, he was tasked with recalling his 11-digit voucher number, which, due to his photographic memory, he was able to recall alongside his place of birth and the name of the first mate, which was also asked for. Then, while aboard, a mutiny broke out. Burly sailors tussled over poor pay, bad working conditions, and of course, dirty beds.
Nobody likes a dirty bed.
I sort of feel like the dirty bed is your fault if you have one. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's making the bed dirty but you.
Right, but if they don't have the ability to clean their own beds because they're on the ocean for however long, then
Shouldn't they be mutinizing for showers then? Or pajamas?
Yeah, or more bed sheets to swap them out.
It just seems like their mutiny is because they don't like somebody, to be honest. Dirty beds, come on. You're on a fucking ship.
Hey,
can't
man.
Can't do anything about it.
I think it depends on how dirty the bed is.
I'm going to stage a mutiny because I have dirty teeth.
Yeah, mutiny.
Seems legit.
You just revolt because you have a poopy butthole? Well, whose fault is that? During the voyage, I sat most of the time at the stern of the ship watching for an opportunity to save somebody from a watery grave without the slightest thought of danger. Later, when I absorbed some of the practical American sense, I shivered at the recollection and marveled at my former folly. Tesla's just out there, stern of the ship, like,
oh, if somebody jumps into the ocean, I will save them.
Fast forward, everyone's still using candles in 2023. Adhering to all the tropes of the American dream and even a stereotype known of the Knights Templar, when Tesla arrived in New York, he only had 4 cents.
4 denarii?
He only had 4 denarii, but also remnants of my belongings, some poems and articles I had written, and a package of calculations relating to solutions of an unsolvable integral, and also to my flying machine.
Oh, that sucks.
You show up in America and all you have is 4 cents and the blueprints of a helicopter.
Woo!
It's the American dream.
Now, he's either one of them Serbian engineers or a terrorist. Why you got plans to a flying machine? As fate would have it, the Statue of Liberty was still under construction. And prior to Ellis Island, immigrants such as he were taken to Manhattan's Castle Clinton Depot, a dreary former fort on the southern tip of Manhattan Island, and was recorded as Swedish because the customs officer had no idea what Smiljan was. Tesla was initially unimpressed. What I left was beautiful, artistic, and fascinating in every way. What I saw here was machined, rough, and unattractive. A burly policeman was twirling his stick, which looked to me as big as a log. I approached him politely with the request to direct me where to go.
Six block down, then to the left, he said with murder in his eyes.
Is this America?
Damn straight,
he would later write. It is a century behind Europe and civilization. But in as little as 5 years, his opinion would change dramatically. I became convinced that it was more than 100 years ahead of Europe, and nothing has happened to this day to change my opinion.
It's like that meme that is like of a Taco Bell in the middle of the plains, and it's like, the European mind cannot comprehend. He didn't get it at first, but eventually he was able to comprehend.
Well, his opinion about America began to change pretty quick. After all, Tesla only had to walk a few blocks before he found an honest opportunity, and his situation turned around as well. As he strolled through Manhattan on that pleasant Friday, he happened upon a foreman of a small machine shop who was clearly quite exasperated with unsuccessfully repairing what Tesla described as a machine of European origin. Having declared the task hopeless moments before, the young Serbian engineer walked up. Relishing the challenge, Tesla offered his assistance. It was not easy, but I finally had it in perfect working condition. Happy just to help, Tesla was surprised when the foreman handed him $20, the equivalent of around $500 today, and he suddenly found himself wishing he had arrived years earlier. So like, all he had to do was walk a few blocks, and he went from, I don't know how I'm gonna afford food, to like, oh, I can stay in a nice hotel and, you know, maybe get some new underpants.
Well, you definitely need them after that boat ride, apparently.
Gotta love the American free market.
The very next day, Tesla would meet his employer and personal hero, Thomas Edison. In his memoirs, Tesla said up to this moment, he had lamented being so much of a nerd, but this changed immediately when he realized that Edison was impressed with his ability to speak numerous languages fluently, how well-read he was, and his gentlemanly decorum. Edison, on the other hand, was described as grumpy, frumpy, a little bit short. He seemed to speak muddled English from years of tobacco chewing, which upon doing so, revealed a noticeable Midwestern drawl. His machine shop, on the other hand, was built into an impressive brownstone, while the main floor was a showroom replete with impressive glittering electric chandeliers and lamps to impress potential investors. Others served as a night school for fledgling engineers, potential recruits, and unmarried employees even lived on the top floor. Remember when we said that places of employment can be considered cults? This is a perfect example.
When you sleep at work, you get more overtime done.
It's true.
I've been in that position before where you sleep at work, and that's where you have the realization that you have no life.
It does cut down on your commute time, though.
Yeah, but there's a reason why unmarried employees live there.
You don't want everyone hearing through the thin walls how much your wife screams that you're an insufferable nerd.
Oh, God.
Dale, all you ever worry about is that damn light bulb! How about you worry about what's inside my pants for once? You can find a light switch in the dark, but what about my clitoris, Dale? I got an idea. You got a long strip of plastic? Can you make it vibrate for me, Dale? I'll keep it in my drawer along with your dignity. Now get back to work, Dale!
What a nightmare.
Now what about this Thomas Edison guy? What's he all about?
So his full name's Thomas Alva Edison, and he was born on February 11th in 1847 in Milan, Ohio. And he was the seventh and last child of his parents, Samuel Ogden Edison Jr., and Nancy Matthews Elliott. Interestingly enough, he actually came from a line of rebels. His great-grandfather, John Edison, with a Dutch spelling, it's like a different spelling, he was actually a British loyalist from the Tory party.
Boo!
And he
fought against, boo!
Straight up, imperialist. So he fought against George Washington when the American Revolution was kicking off. And later, after he failed miserably, he fled New Jersey to Nova Scotia, Canada.
We don't want him. Have him back.
Well, just wait. After defecting to Canada for a generation, Edison's father then continued the tradition of rebellion and fled back into the United States, into Michigan, after participating in an unsuccessful coup of the Royal Canadian government. So they just couldn't sit still or take orders from people, apparently.
Terrible.
So, I know.
They're like, you know what? We actually don't like the British Empire.
But I'm sure they had to wait like a whole generation, because if they came right back, then they would have gotten executed in America as well. Anyway, luckily, that didn't happen. The family eventually settled in Ohio, and that's when Thomas, or Al as his family nicknamed him, was born. His mother had previously worked as a school teacher, and when he was young, she taught him reading, writing, and arithmetic, and this was before he attended school. Mm. However, he dropped out of school in less than a year due to his mischievous and free-spirited behavior. Some people actually think in modern times that he probably had ADHD, like a really severe case. He did poorly in traditional schools, both because of that. He had a tendency to daydream. He hyperfixated on his experiments at all times, not paying attention to the teacher, or from his penchant to play tricks on other unwitting children and even adults. So he was just basically making a mess of the classroom.
He was one of those kids that like ran around with the scented markers, like shoving them in other kids' noses.
Yeah, probably during nap time. Like, yeah, he just did not work well in structured environments, apparently. And as he grew up, his experiments became more and more complex. And one of the first ones he was managing at home even managed to burn down his father's barn with a spark that came off of it. He was making a rudimentary electrical generator.
Woo!
He would also often trick people into touching his inventions to receive an unpleasant shock, because he found it amusing.
Oh, he's one of those guys.
He would.
He might have invented that little button that, you know, that the clowns have that buzz you. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he invented those. Around the age of 12, after a bout of scarlet fever and numerous untreated ear infections, he became partially deaf in both ears, and one was actually really worse than the other. Like, he was almost fully deaf in one ear. But when he grew up, he would often cite this disability as a positive thing, claiming that it allowed him to focus on his work and inner thoughts more easily, and it caused him to be less distracted by the outside world.
Sounds like he needed it a little bit.
Yeah, it probably helped him with his inventions for sure, but he's not going to listen to any teachers. So pretty much self-taught, did not go to any kind of formal education at all. And then later on, when he became a teenager, the family moved back up to Michigan in Port Huron. Here, he earned money on the trains to Detroit, hustling newspapers and concessions to fuel his passion for invention. He would often use his wages to purchase equipment for his ongoing experiments. When he was 19, he moved to Louisville, Kentucky to start working for the Western Union Company, acting for the Associated Press's Newswire as a telegraph transmitter. He chose to work the night shift so he could use the spare time between relaying news headlines to tinker with his own experiments. Obsessed much?
Just a little.
Shortly after patenting his first invention, the electronic voting machine, he would move on to New York City and attract the attention and support of a fellow inventor, Franklin Leonard Pope, who allowed him to live in the basement of his New Jersey property while Edison worked for a financial firm.
He was already thinking about how to rig the elections?
Yeah, raising my eyebrows at him, for sure. Anyway, in 1869, the two friends founded a new company together as electrical engineers, and by 1874, Edison had already begun to perfect a dual-line telegraph system, allowing two telegraph signals to be broadcasted at the same time through the same wire. So it's like you get an extra line at your house. Remember when you could get two phone lines in your house? So cool.
Oh yeah, the bat line.
In 1876, a couple years later, Edison established his original lab in Menlo Park, New Jersey. From here, he would go on to patent many more inventions, the next in line being the quadruple telegraph, which essentially brought the bandwidth on one telegraph machine from two up to four signals at a time. He continued to invent many core technological inventions that defined the 20th century, such as the automatic repeater for telegraph systems, the incandescent light bulb, the motion picture camera, parallel circuits, the mimeograph machine, the phonograph, telephone and microphone technologies, iron ore separators, and even electrical rail systems, and much, much more probably. By the time he was finished inventing, Edison packed an amazing 1,093 patents under his belt, and those patents made lots of money. Edison, in the peak of his career, had a certain style of experimentation that was extremely meticulous and automatic. Throw as much shit at the wall as possible and see what sticks, essentially. It worked for him too, as his inventions quickly made him one of the richest men in the century. He was more of an entrepreneur and hustler than he was a thoughtful idealist who simply invented for the sake of the experience, though. He put his work to good use and would often show off new inventions to the public in creative ways, drumming up more interest in monetary investment. For example, one of the direct current generator stations he unveiled in New York was strategically placed adjacent to Wall Street, powering through the larger buildings there in order to gain the attention of financial firms, stock investors, and other entrepreneurs that would eventually invest in Edison and his ideas in order to make a fortune in the markets. It's a pretty smart marketeer there.
Indeed.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, J.P. Morgan was attracted to Edison's work.
Oh yeah, they worked for many years together.
Yeah.
And we'll get into, like, he plays a role later in incorporating Edison's original company. So Edison obviously was great at marketing the utility of his inventions, but he never seemed to show a deep fascination in the mathematical theorems his technology used, or the logic behind why they worked the way they did. He actually required a team in order to stipulate the physics and mathematical principles behind the technology he invented. He said once, quote, "Genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration," Edison claimed, adding that when he invented the incandescent light bulb, he was completely unaware of the underlying mathematical theory that described how his invention actually functioned. Quote, "At the time I experimented on the incandescent lamp, I did not understand Ohm's law. Moreover, I do not want to understand Ohm's law. It would prevent me from experimenting."
Hey team, I invented a machine where you can hear ghosts talk. Edison, I believe that's audio waves of transverse sound. I don't want to hear your wacky schmacky explanation of how them ghosts speak to my machine. You just write it down for the journals over there and we'll sell it.
I'm gonna call it a spirit box.
That's how I talk to your mother.
So many years later, in a New York Times interview published in 1931, Tesla would describe his childhood hero, mentor, and eventual rival from his perspective. And Tesla says, "Everything he achieved was the result of persistent trials and experiments, often performed at random, but always attesting extraordinary vigor and resource. Starting from a few known elements, he would make their combinations and permutations, tabulate them, and run through the whole list, completing test after test with incredible rapidity until he obtained a clue. His mind was dominated by but one idea, to leave no stone unturned, to exhaust every possibility."
Tesla would also say of Edison, quote, "If he had a needle to find in a haystack, he would not stop to reason where it was most likely to be, but would proceed at once with the feverish diligence of a bee to examine straw after straw until he found the object of his search."
He also said, "His method was inefficient in the extreme, for an immense ground had to be covered to get anything at all unless blind chance intervened, and, at first, I was almost sorry to witness of his doings, knowing that just a little theory and calculation would have saved him 90% of the labor. But he had a veritable contempt for book learning and mathematical knowledge, trusting himself entirely to his inventor's instinct and practical American sense. In view of this, the truly prodigious amount of his actual accomplishments is little short of a miracle."
Edison is all 100 monkeys in the basement hitting random keys until Shakespeare falls out.
Yeah.
"The recurrence of a phenomenon like Edison is not very likely. The profound change of conditions and the ever-increasing necessity of theoretical training would seem to make it impossible. He will occupy a unique and exalted position in the history of his native land, which might as well be proud of his great genius and undying achievements in the interest of humanity."
That's a very polite way of saying that nobody's allowed to be that dumb anymore.
Or like, just basically saying he's so dumb that he's good.
"No one will ever be dumb like him ever again. We'll make sure of that." Despite their differences, Tesla made a good first impression on Edison, who was impressed with his gentlemanly decorum, white gloves, and worldly ways, choosing to dispatch him right away on an important but frustrating assignment. Of this, Tesla says in his memoirs, "The SS Oregon, the fastest passenger steamer at the time, had both of its lighting machines disabled, and its sailing was delayed. As the superstructure had been built after their installation, it was impossible to remove them from the hold. The predicament was a serious one, and Edison was much annoyed. In the evening, I took the necessary instruments with me and went aboard the vessel where I stayed for the night. The dynamos were in bad condition, having several short circuits and breaks, but with the assistance of the crew, I succeeded in putting them in good shape. At 5 o'clock in the morning, when passing along Fifth Avenue on my way to the shop, I met Edison with Batchelor and a few others as they were returning home to retire. 'Here's our Parisian running around at night,' he said. When I told him I was coming from the SS Oregon and had repaired both machines, he looked at me in silence and walked away without another word. But when he had gone some distance, I heard, with my cat-like super hearing, him remark, 'Batchelor, this is a damn good man.' And from then on, I had full freedom in directing the work. For nearly a year, my regular hours were from 10:30 a.m. until 5 o'clock the next morning, without a day's exception. Edison said to me, 'I've had many hard-working assistants, but you take the cake.'"
That's just Tesla making his own hours, right?
Pretty much.
I get to do that, and it's really kind of like the best life, but also painful as fuck.
I think it's fun to point out that Edison also subsisted on very little sleep, sometimes toiling for days at a time, only taking short cat naps in his office or even on an available tabletop, which sounds awful. Speaking of this, Tesla once said, "I came from Paris in the spring of 1884 and was brought in intimate contact with him. We experimented day and night, holidays not accepted. His existence was made up of alternate periods of work and sleep in the laboratory. He has no hobby, cared for no sport or amusement of any kind, and lived in utter disregard of the most elementary rules of hygiene. There can be no doubt that if he had not married later a woman of exceptional intelligence, who made it the object of her life to preserve him, he would have died many years ago from consequences of sheer neglect. So great and uncontrollable was his passion for work."
Tesla's like, man, this guy don't wash himself.
So he'd be okay with the dirty bed.
Yes, or a couch or a table to sleep on, or the floor. Like, apparently Edison exists to live, breathe, eat, and do his experiments.
Well, it's funny, Tesla was too, but he was like locked into a routine, you know? It was like clockwork. He did the same thing every day. And part of that was going to a nice place to retire, even if it was only for 3 hours.
And, you know, cleaning himself like a cat from time to time.
I mean, those are two different approaches to the same problem. You know, you can be very methodical, very ceremonial magician about it, or be very chaos magician about it, I guess, and sleep in the dirt like ancient human to be inspired to make new technology. I think it works.
I get this mental image of Edison as like an anthropomorphized pig, like rolling around and like seeing what works and what doesn't work, just getting peppered in mud. And then Tesla's over there like as a cat, like meticulously knocking shit off the table and then like licking himself, keeping clean.
Yeah, they're definitely like two sides to a coin. They're complete opposites in the way they approach stuff. So after working for Edison for about a year, Tesla proposed some improvements to the DC generators and motors that Edison was producing, but wanted to demonstrate that alternating current could be utilized and even more efficient than the direct current generators.
When Tesla proposed making a switch to alternating current power, Edison replied very bluntly that he was not interested in alternating current. There was no future in it, and anyone who dabbled in that field was wasting his time. And besides, it was a deadly current, whereas direct current was safe. I like how he accuses Tesla of wasting his time. Meanwhile, he's arriving at the correct answer by trying every wrong thing first, regardless of what science says.
Yeah.
Succinctly put, the electric orthodoxy simply could not tolerate Tesla's black magic of alternating current.
Stubbornly, Edison refused to switch to alternating current, which would mean giving up his stronghold on the direct current patents, which he alone controlled, and the growing infrastructure that had made his company the industry leader. Instead, he offered Tesla a $50,000 bonus if he could simply improve his direct current technology and make the generators more efficient.
"During this period, I designed 24 different types of standard machines with short cores and of uniform pattern, which replaced the old ones." His improvements were not small ones either. They made the devices cheaper and 3 times as efficient, saving Edison enormous sums of money.
And when Tesla delivered on this bet, Edison flaked out and insisted the bet was a joke and told him, quote, "You don't understand our American humor." What a douche.
It's like, didn't your dad fight George Washington and lose?
So Edison instead offered him a substantial $10 pay raise on his $18 weekly wages, which actually wasn't anything to shake a stick at. It was a pretty good raise. But Tesla refused on the principle of the matter. You know, you don't joke about that kind of shit, really. And he resigned on the spot and decided to start his own company instead, where he was free to pursue his experimentation and development of alternating current. Never meet your heroes, kids.
Yeah, I feel like if I ever met David Bowie, I'd be like, I'm your biggest fan. And he'd be like, I never heard of you. I'd be like, aw.
Honestly, I had that same experience with Alex Gray, and having spoken with Chet Czar a number of times, I can tell you, he's the bigger gentleman of the Tool artists, if you will.
Is that the guy who did the music videos?
Possum was eating my cigarettes.
That's quite the line for the decade.
I mean, ugh, god damn it, they're so annoying sometimes.
Yeah, they're possums.
They're so dumb. One was trying to eat a beer can earlier. Who? Hold on, she's getting into shit. Hold on, sorry.
I can hear it.
Marisama just has marsupial problems.
It's an interesting problem to have as an American.
It is.
Eventually, the Tesla Electric Light and Manufacturing Company was founded in 1884, and Tesla spent his time perfecting his inventions, getting them patented in his humble New York lab near a bustling wholesale food market.
Its principal investor and owner, Benjamin Vail, had been a town council member in Rahway, New Jersey, and had long been enchanted by electric lighting, wanting his village to be known for the use of modern technology.
While Benjamin put down the initial investment, Tesla would raise money from smaller investors and sell his patents in order to keep the cash flowing into the company, taking shares of stock in exchange.
This proved to be a huge mistake. While Romwe's streets and workshops were now powered and lit by what the company declared was the most perfect automatic self-regulating system of electric arc lighting yet produced, with no flickering or hissing, Benjamin decided that manufacturing should cease, choosing to focus on operating the now-renowned system, which no longer needed Tesla's expertise or inventions. Worse yet, the company owed Tesla no royalties because, after all, they now owned his patents. Tesla was crushed. He described the incident as the hardest blow I ever received. I was forced out of the company, losing not only all my interests, but also my reputation as an engineer and inventor. Broke and without good prospects, Tesla lived through a year of terrible heartaches and bitter tears, my suffering being intensified by material want, with many days unknowing of where my next meal was coming from. Yet, never afraid to work, he approached a crew digging ditches for underground telephone and telegraph lines who, although initially laughed at his good clothes and white hands, Tesla recounts, I worked harder than anybody. At the end of the day, I had $2. Meanwhile, in Edison's New Jersey lamp factory, 8 filament workers joined a union and, quote, became very insolent, knowing that it was very impossible to manufacture lamps without them. In response, Edison designed 30 machines to automate their jobs and boasted, the union went out. It's been out ever since. The electric pope demonstrated that he could, if he so desired, replace his congregation with mechanical golems if they ever challenged his authority.
Based and engineer-pilled.
Despite these hard times, spending hours digging ditches did little to discourage Tesla's prolific imagination, which would, despite his lowly station, open doors to the heights of his financial success. At one point, Tesla shared his idea for a thermomagnetic motor with his foreman, who was so impressed by its ingenuity that he introduced Tesla to Alfred Brown, a superintendent of Western Union's New York Metropolitan District, and a first-class electrician and expert in underground telegraph work. Brown then, in turn, introduced Tesla to Charles Peck, a patent lawyer from Englewood, New Jersey, and secretary of the Mutual Union Telegraph Company, which supplied and operated 25,000 dedicated telecommunication lines in 22 states for secure data exchange between banks. And that sounds fancy even by today's standards. As fate would have it, Brown and Peck turned out to be a tremendous blessing for Tesla, both grounding him in the practicalities of business while offering him a license to imagine and invent. They were in all their dealings with me the finest and noblest characters I've ever met in my life. Together, Tesla, Peck, and Brown formed the Tesla Electric Company in April of 1887, with the inventor receiving a third of the profits, Peck and Brown to split a third, and setting a third aside to develop new innovations. Better still, Tesla would receive a monthly salary of $250, which is roughly equivalent to $78,000 annually today. He also had access to a bigger laboratory in Manhattan's financial district, now West Broadway, none too far from Edison's downtown office. Tesla promised to work on projects beyond his revolutionary AC motor and, ironically, developed a series of commutators to improve DC motors at Peck and Brown's behest. They believed, after all, that because DC dominated the market, making improvements to it would yield bigger profits. Tesla would not relent, however, and devised the dramatic demonstration to change their priorities using a myth of Christopher Columbus's inspiration. Once, at dinner, a number of nobles were criticizing Columbus on the grounds that traveling to the New World was, well, none too remarkable of an achievement. You know what people talk about going to the moon? They don't even know about orbit. Excuse me. In response, Columbus ordered eggs to the table and challenged his critics to balance the egg on its end, which none at the table could accomplish. Columbus then cracked the bottom of one egg slightly and balanced it without effort, remarking that the impossible was easy once you properly understood it, prompting Queen Isabella to fund his next adventure. Likewise, Tesla gathered Peck and Brown, placed a copper egg on a table, and flipped a switch which activated a four-coiled magnet underneath that produced alternating current. The egg began to spin faster and faster until it stopped wobbling, stood on its end, and spun smoothly in place. Peck and Brown were astonished. In that moment, the pair became supporters of Tesla's innovations with alternating current. Now believers in Tesla's aims to revolutionize the industry, the team sprung into action, bolstering Tesla's public image, which was, well, necessary for the group to procure any funding or interest whatsoever. After all, Tesla had kept a low profile, and he had not joined any trade clubs or societies, which made him pretty much a nobody. Tesla would need to become part of a society of wizards if he wanted to become known as one. To get started, the team needed endorsement from a respected expert and invited Cornell
University's physics professor, William Anthony, to check out the AC motors that Tesla was working on. Anthony was well impressed, writing to his colleague, "I have seen a system of alternating current motors in New York that promises great things." Peck and Brown also enlisted two leading trade journalists, Charles Price of the Electrical Review and Thomas Comerford Martin of Electrical World, inviting them both to Tesla's lab. While Price wrote a favorable story, Martin, on the other hand, was entranced with Tesla, recognizing his X-ray eyes and describing him as having eyes that recall all the stories one has read of keenness of vision and phenomenal ability to see through things. Quickly, Comerford Martin became Tesla's biggest cheerleader, prompting a glowing profile in the New York World, Manhattan's widest circulation daily, with a headline of "Our Foremost Electrician," bearing the subhead which read, "Greater even than Edison." Then, a few months later, the New York Times wrote a profile of Tesla with the subhead, "Advancing Certainty to Greatest Triumphs." They would have chosen shorter words today. Finally convinced that a good wizard needs a bard or three to become legendary, Tesla reluctantly agreed to go on a lecture tour where he blew every other presenter out of the water with his renowned brand of humbleness, razor-sharp clarity, and grace. He even began eating at the world-famous Delmonico's, which was incredibly fancy, had notoriously delicious food, and attracted him any number of powerful socialites, which quickly took an interest in his work. Over time, Delmonico's would become ground zero for impressing journalists and experts in the field with fancy dinners before taking them to tour the lab, with patents for his new AC system being approved and skyrocketing in reputation. The Tesla Electric Company was positioned to do great things, eventually earning the attention of George Westinghouse, a Pittsburgh-based inventor and businessman who had developed air brakes for railroad cars and wanted badly to challenge Edison's dominance in the electric industry by utilizing the advantages of alternating current. When Tesla made the news with his new alternating current motors and transformers, a missing piece of the puzzle, Westinghouse shed a bead of sweat over the prospect of not owning all the good alternating current patents and quickly dispatched his lawyer Denison H.R. Gardner to New York to figure out what his approach should be towards Tesla's machines. Gardner was very impressed with Tesla's machines, but horrified at Peck's hardball negotiations, who claimed the team already had a deal on the table with a San Francisco capitalist, Mr. Butterworth, to pay them $200,000 in licensing, plus a royalty of $2.50 for every horsepower sold. When Gardner heard this, he replied, "There's no possibility of our considering that matter seriously." Peck warned him in reply that unless Westinghouse can let them know by 10 o'clock Friday of this week whether or not we propose seriously looking into the matter, they will accept Butterworth's position. Westinghouse, however, was not willing to give up just yet and sent his chief scientist, William Stanley, to check out the goods. When Stanley returned, he said, "Their motor is the best thing I have seen of its kind. I believe it more efficient than most direct current motors. I also believe the patent belongs to them." Confident he could pass on the expense to his customers, Westinghouse, well, he was all in.
George eventually agreed to pay $60,000 in cash or stock options for a licensing fee, along with a $2.50 royalty for each horsepower of electricity sold. This would prove to be the beginning of what historians would dub the War of the Currents. Quick question. Mr. Butterworth was paying more. How? How did they...
That's a good clue, isn't it? Peck is like...
I mean...
we have a guy named Butterworth. He's going to pay $200,000 plus a royalty fee. And then he finally gets
it's
George.
It's just made up.
He gets George on the phone.
So he gets pancakes in the morning and sees the Miss Butterworth's bottle. Is like, yeah, we got Mr. Butterworth.
Is it cash up front? Is that why?
Yeah, I think they were bluffing to get them to pay more.
Well, George, you know, since you're such a great guy, I guess I can take $60,000. That's fine. I'll call Mr. Butterworth and tell him I don't like money.
Well, Tesla's pretty notorious for making poor business decisions, so...
I mean, that's why he needed Peck.
Oh.
Yeah, Peck was lying to get him more money.
It was a farce.
The name that they chose, that's like a Mrs. Doubtfire moment. Like, Mr. Butterworth, really?
I just like that all they had to do was not take advantage of Tesla, and they still made a bunch of money. So, go them.
I mean...
It'll get worse, believe me.
Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben made me a deal, so I don't know, what can you do?
Yo!
But if you'd like to hear about the War of the Currents, then please visit www.patreon.com/thewholerabbit, where your monthly donation of just 5
$5 will not only get you the extended version of this show, but all of our shows going back at least 4 years. Not only that, I'll send you a 5x5 high quality vinyl sticker of our Big Bunny Baphomet cover art, and you'll immediately be given the secret keys to our Discord server, where you could talk to us about strange new methods of inventing power generation in your basement with common household appliances.
Or share pictures of your pets.
That too. Thank you, everybody. Eat carrots and shoot lasers.
Pew, pew, pew.
Pew, pew.